It was 650,000. We put down 25% and put out about 180,000 down, I guess.
Yeah.
Our idea was to keep looking at other stuff. We looked at industrial buildings. We were going to build this sort of diversified portfolio. And every building we looked at, we would compare the returns to the car wash. We'd be like,
right,
car wash is kicking ass. Why don't we just buy another car wash?
All right, we got Chris Berg here. What's up, man? How you doing?
How's it going, Raleigh?
I'm doing all right. We're going to talk about taxes. We're going to talk about making more money than you know what to do with. We're going to talk about growing on Twitter, car washes, all the things. So yeah. give like a synopsis. I saw that you were in the physical therapy space. Was that like was that where it all began?
Not physical. So I've had this crazy career, so people get confused about it all the time. I started off in construction in 2003. Dug ditches for a living, literally, like for water and sewer lines, and just about killed myself doing it. It was extremely stressful. Yeah. It was one of these 80-hour week. I bought the business. I had no idea what it was doing. I didn't have an entrepreneurial.
Oh, you acquired, you bought the business.
I bought that business, bought it for $180,000 is what it cost me. And I had to get an SBL loan for 130 of it. People would laugh at those numbers now, but that's in 2003, that was a lot of money to me. And grew the business. Revenues were about 180 and grew it up to about 2.6 million and 25 guys and all this stuff, but it almost killed me. Sure. Sold that, made a nice sum and literally moved off the grid. Went to Steamboat Springs on this mountain lake, solar and wind powered home. And that's where I got into online stuff because this was 2007 and construction and real estate just stopped.
Sure.
There was no alternative. It just stopped. There was nothing to be done. So I read 4-Hour Work Week and thought, well, I got to do something. Let's do online stuff. I didn't know anything about the internet, really. I was not a computer guy, but learned it. And ever since then, have had money-making websites, e-commerce, email newsletters, that kind of thing. So in the physical space, we really do physical remedies, supplements, CBD, health coaching, stuff like that. So that's probably where the physical therapy thing came from.
Got it. I had a very similar process where I was in a very physical, you know, brick and mortar business. And after I sold those, I was like, under no circumstance will I ever sign a lease again or do anything in the physical world ever. I mean, and I went through COVID through that. Right. So I had these trampoline parks and these escape room businesses, and we had this whole story about how it was recession proof and, you know, it was un-Amazon, you know, disruptable. Yeah. And we had this whole story about how it was just a bulletproof business. And then COVID happened and it became a very not bulletproof business for a period of time. And then when I got out of it, I was like, I'm never doing a business with high fixed costs ever again. And you know, the things that I've done since then have almost been just a pure reaction, right? I've just swung the pendulum like completely to the other side. And so was it a very similar process? I mean, if you see, I'm sure if you're digging ditches at 4 a.m. to avoid the heat and then you hear and then you read Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week, you're like, this is so much better.
Yeah, that was really the birth of the solopreneur, right? The vagabond solopreneur. It's just me and my backpack and my laptop, right? I didn't really go that far, but the notion of having a business and having almost no employees was very attractive after having 25, 26 guys. And so, I hired my first VA in 2009. He's still with me.
Amazing.
And I totally went that direction. And that business is awesome because we'll do probably close to 18 million this year. And we have like 9 people. Then, you know, a lot of those people manage the people. Like if we need a customer service rep, the customer service manager just hires them and we say hi to them on the company chat.
And what is that business? What is the, it's a e-com product based.
Yeah. It's the supplements, CBD. And then we publish newsletters. So the whole model is you go out and get a customer, sometimes YouTube, sometimes email, sometimes Facebook. And then we break even on that sale and we make money by selling them more products through our newsletters and selling our partners' products through affiliate links and stuff like that. So we do a lot of email marketing. We do a lot of, I send about 2 million emails a day to those people.
2009, I mean, how far onto the frontier was that in 2000? It seems like I hear about all that stuff now, and I'm kind of in that world, but I assume in 2009.
Everything was new. Like AdWords was somewhat stabilized, but it was still full of spam and everything. Like people don't understand, like even then Google was really kind of weird.
Right.
Amazon was nothing like it is now. It was still mostly books. It was probably 80% books. And they had just gotten into like clothing and stuff. So you couldn't really sell supplements on there. It was wild. So I found this VA when Facebook came along, 2009. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, you can do a page for a company, but you literally had to do HTML and JavaScript to get it done. It was still programming. It was so archaic that so I didn't know how to do that stuff. So I hired this VA, and his email is still page designer, because his job, he's in Pakistan, he made a living out of just people fix their Facebook page. So it was very, very early frontier back then, for sure.
That's crazy. I mean, and maybe I just had my head down because I was a lawyer, so I never thought about having to make money outside of just billing time. And then I became a trampoline park escape room thing. And from a customer acquisition standpoint, I never thought about media or like breaking even on the first sale or any of that stuff. I just thought about finding great locations. And so I feel like maybe this world has always existed and I've just been ignorant to it, which is totally a possibility. But I think I would assume 15 years ago, it was like you and four other people that were like thinking about this kind of stuff. What is the ownership of that CBD business? Is that you and a partner, just solo dolo?
I have a 50-50 partner on that who's not on Twitter, shockingly. He's sort of ops and I'm sort of marketing and awesome. We work on the vision and the architecture together, but he does a lot more of the back office stuff.
And so walk me through going from a CBD business that starts printing money on some time horizon and then to sheltering that money, car washes, everything else that led subsequent to that.
Yeah. So like most entrepreneurs, I have a fair amount of ADD when it just comes to business ideas. And the online thing is great because you can chase some of that. You know, you can follow some bunny trails and some of those wormholes. But I was always looking for a lucrative side gig that sort of excited me, you know. And so I looked at Amazon FBA. I actually thought about doing a men's jewelry line. I did crypto trading for a little while, you know, in 2020 when everything was popping off. I had some residential real estate rentals way back when I had my excavation business. It was kind of a pain in the ass. So I got burned out on real estate early on. But I was always looking like there's got to be some way, you know, digital world was great because it was easy in a sense. Like you said, the physicality of your physical locations and construction, all that stuff was tiring. I love the digital space, but it also didn't feel real. Like it was just vapor and it felt like it could go away at any time. You know, just Facebook would just shut our ads accounts down and AdWords could do that too. And, you know, it was changing so fast. You just had to wonder like, will this exist in 5 years? Right. So I was looking for something just more permanent and I got into Twitter. I've been on Twitter forever, but for like a decade, Twitter was just like a joke and sports argument machine. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, guys like Nick Huber and a lot of people, the startup people started really posting their journey and everything. I got interested. I started understanding commercial real estate better. And it was, I realized that I had this weird misunderstanding about the profit margins and how the properties were valued specifically. I had always looked at it, you know, a cap rate is technically kind of a profit margin, right? Like if it makes 9%, that it's a 9% cap rate. And I always looked at that and thought, well, who want a 9% profit margin?
Coming from CBD.
And like we're doing like 15% on a bad day. And I'm like, why would anybody sign up for that? And then these guys started showing me, well, we're at a 9% profit margin. If you increase that profit by 50%, you have massively increased the value of that property also by 50%. And hey, this is way more tradable, right? Like a website, a CBD company, like you might sell it.
Right.
You might just have to wind it down. That's a business that probably won't trade. at some point, right? It's hard to sell some of these businesses. 80% of them will probably never sell, right?
Right.
Whereas a commercial real estate, like, it will sell. It might take a while, but it will absolutely sell. And
yeah,
there is this metric accepted by almost everybody on how to value it. So I internalized that and I thought, well, maybe we'll do self-storage, right? Like, mm-hmm. 2020, 2021, everybody's doing storage. I looked at that, found one of my good friends here in town. He was doing the same thing. He was looking at self-storage. So we looked at it together and nobody wanted to sell. I got laughed at sometimes when people would say, I'm never going to sell this thing. So
yeah,
saw a car wash for sale in that process and kind of set it aside. It's not what we were looking for. I came back to it 6 months later, still on the market, and the sellers had actually upgraded the equipment and that kind of thing, kicked it around and thought, screw it, let's do it. It was $650,000. We put down 25%, which is put out about $180,000 down, I guess.
Yeah.
Our idea was to keep looking at other stuff. We looked at industrial buildings. We were going to build this sort of diversified portfolio. And every building we looked at, we would compare the returns to the car wash. We'd be like,
right,
car wash is kicking ass. Why don't we just buy another car wash? You know, this is all a year ago. I bought the first one on April 22nd, 2022.
No way.
So when I'm the car wash guy, I'm like the new car wash guy. People laugh at that, like, oh, you already have a course? You haven't even owned the car wash for a year? I'm like, we move fast around here, guys.
That's right. And so I bought a vacant restaurant that had been abandoned from Checkers, which is a burger franchise in the Southeast. I guess it's Rally's on the West Coast. There's nothing really in the mountain region where I'm at that's similar. So I had there's like a vacant 0.6 acres and a billboard and this vacant restaurant. So I looked at doing a car wash from the ground up.
Yeah.
Right. So I got into, like, you know, what the vacancy rates need to be. Like, what does competition look like? What does absorption look like in the market?
Yeah.
I just kind of dabbled with it. And it felt like, even though I had the land, it felt like there was so much money in particularly kind of like the self-serve car washes. Like, I know Quick Quack, you know, you have all these kind of like private equity backed car wash roll-ups that are happening of these massive brands. Yeah. And so two questions that I had, I know that you do a different type of car wash, which is what I wanted you to kind of explain that versus this other automatic one. And then the other thing that I could never get massively comfortable with was like what labor looks like in those and managing people. I was managing trampoline parks, which had a bunch of employees, and I knew that the trampoline parks that I managed in states that I didn't visit frequently suffered from an operational standpoint. And, you know, this land was in Florida. I felt like I needed to be more operational than I really wanted to be to pick up an extra $5,000 a month. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So we focus on the self-serve car washes. They usually have three or four self-serve bays. And they've got one automatic that's usually what's called a touch free, which is just the arm that swings around. There's no brushes or anything in those car washes. The Quick Quacks and what's called an express or a tunnel wash is a big operation, $3 to $7 million build out,
right?
Heavy CapEx, right? Those are very different. Those are designed to crank through as many cars a day as possible. But the cars that go in, they can't have any kind of roof rack or bumper racks on them. They can't be modified in any way. And they can't be really dirty, because if a dirty car rolls through, all the brushes pick up that dirt and then they leave it on the next car behind it and they scratch the car behind it. It's for upper middle class generally, and for people who want to wash their car once or twice, two or three times a month, and they just want to be fast, right?
And it's also not for super high end cars.
Exactly.
Like, I just got a G-Wagon and I just don't want to wash it right now.
No. You don't want to go through that, right? You're not going to go through, because the downside is so big. It could scratch it.
Yeah.
It could rip off a mirror.
Right.
And it's an unusual size, right? It's big. It's tall.
Yeah.
They're just not really made to handle those vehicles. The people who run them will tell you differently, but they're just not.
Yeah.
So we're appealing to very blue collar folks. We're appealing to Hispanic folks, who are a huge segment of the population, who have this huge pride of ownership about their vehicles. They love on the Saturday morning to take it down to the self-serve.
Yeah.
And they will spend an hour and a half cleaning their car.
And it's Hispanics because they modify their cars a lot. And
they modify their cars. Yep. And
just the cost, it's just too cost prohibitive to go through an automatic.
Well, and it's just a pride of ownership thing. They want to do it themselves. They want it to be done. They don't trust those brushes for one. A lot of people have been through a brush wash and they get one scratch and they'll never go back one again. So then they go through our touches. And then a lot of people just want to do it themselves. They have a hot rod or they have a contractor's truck that's covered in racks and stuff hanging off of it. And they'll never go through an automatic. So we appeal to a very different audience. I'm not worried about tunnel washes. I posted something this week about one of our friends in the business. He's got self-serves all over Colorado. And two tunnel washes moved in right next door to a self-serve. And you would think that would be a death knell. Most people would look at that and say, you're done. Scrape it down and build a Chick-fil-A or something. His business went up because you have this dealership effect where people come from all over. They hear about a new car wash. And they find out that I can't go through the tunnel. I've got a roof rack.
Right.
I'm going to go right next door. My car's too dirty. I can't go through there. I'm going to go right next door. So, or I got scratches. I'll never go back.
Right.
So I'm going to go to this place. So anyway, very different model, very different price point too. You know, a tunnel is probably going to cost at least seven figures, probably more into the mid fives or sixes. Our car washes are running, first one we bought was $650,000. We bought a second one for $760,000. We're looking in the low millions, that kind of range. So it's more accessible to somebody who wants to dip their toe into it.
Is it SBA loan stuff or conventional bank, like real estate financing stuff?
Yeah, it's conventional. That's what's beautiful about it is it's just conventional financing. We just approached a couple of local banks and they were both all over it because it's real estate anchored. You've got a ton of assets there. It's very easy to finance.
Did you have to personal guarantee it or the asset was sufficient itself? Or
yeah, we did personal guarantee these first two. We're hoping not to on the next few. The personal guarantee doesn't bother me a lot, especially when there's this real estate involved. I could see how it would for some people. Maybe I have an inflated sense of self-confidence, but it doesn't bother me. I've always done PGs and it's never bitten me.
No, I think it's a lot different. Like I talk to a lot of acquisition entrepreneurs that are looking to personally get, like the people that bought a lot of my trampoline parks, they're signing personal guarantees on basically equipment and a leasehold. I'm like, you guys are crazy.
Yeah,
like, I mean, the cash flow is stable, but there's no, liquefiable asset in the event of a downturn. Like the salvage value of equipment is zero. When you're looking at them, obviously the tax benefit is huge. Do you look at it as like a covered land play of like, let's hold this as a car wash for 5 years and then we can retro it into something else, or we can force appreciation in the operational and the marketing driving it, or
I would say primarily, I think 90% of these locations, if you were to look 20 years down the road, it's still going to be a car wash.
Yeah.
But the land is good plan B for sure. Like the second car wash we bought for $760,000. We've got a deal on the table right now for $1,050,000 to buy that place. And the guy is doing an assemblage and he's going to put in an express car wash.
Sure.
And so he wants our land because he's effectively removing some competition, right? So yeah, the land and the location is definitely awesome safety net. But I think for the most part, most of these places are just going to be a car wash forever.
And do you feel like the couple that you've bought, has it been easy to operate the previous owner, or is it just kind of like, what does that look like?
That's been the part for us that's been the most fun, because in everything I've ever done, I'm sure you're the same way, Raleigh, is you want operational excellence, right? You want it to be the best trampoline parks. We want to be the best car washes, because the better the user experience, the better your business is going to be. That's just all there is to it. And so we went in right away with the first one. First of all, it wasn't even on Google Maps. If you didn't know that this car wash was where it was, it did not exist on the internet. And you just look at like the low-hanging fruit, like you're tripping over this fruit, right? So you put it on Google Maps, you get a bunch of five-star reviews. That increased the business. We advertised the fact that we had a new automatic in there, which the previous owners had put in. That increased the business.
You're doing that on Facebook ads? How'd you advertise it? You just ran ads?
You had it on your Google. We did Google advertising.
Oh, sure.
First of all, we had other, but we did some Google pay-per-click advertising, brand new, automatic. And there's a marquee sign out front. We put it on there. We raised the prices. They hadn't raised the prices. The on-site manager who came with the business had been there for 11 years. He didn't know how to raise the prices. He had never done it. And so, boom, automatic increase of 20%. So we increased this business by 70%. We've had it for 14 months now. The trampoline park, that was a Rubik's Cube, right? Like that was, you had all
so hard, dude.
Yeah, it was so hard. You had all these pieces. You'd move this. Well, then I fucked that thing up over there. And like, and it, online, it's the same way. With the car wash, it was like paper clips. It was like, this is easy, you know? And I don't want to make it sound like everybody's going to have this easy time, but it was so simple to increase that business that now we're just like, okay, let's just keep going. It's fun. It only takes 5 or 10 hours a week when we're just in maintenance mode. When we're buying more car washes, there's definitely more involved there. But, and then the tax benefits, you touched on it. So let me just run through that real quick with your audience.
Run it through. Yeah. Yeah.
The reason that there's all these tunnel washes being built is because of bonus depreciation. And bonus depreciation, people's eyes are going to roll back in their head. The short version is it was basically a handout to taxpayers to get them to invest more in buildings and equipment. So with a car wash, it just so happens, and we feel ass backwards into this. I can't claim to be smart, but a car wash is the perfect combination of land, equipment, and building for bonus depreciation because the land is worth, you know, somewhere between 30 and 60% of the value. The rest is in these depreciable assets that you can write off. Last year, you could write off 100%. This year it's 80%. And so the upshot is that we bought these two car washes and they made great money. They made great cash flow. We used the cash flow from one to buy the second one. And we need just a little bit of an equity injection to buy the second one. And my taxes from those car washes showed a $650,000 loss. So that completely nuked my $225,000 tax bill. So I put about $225,000 into them last year. My $225,000 tax bill gone. So I got my money back already. Right?
Yeah, totally.
So, and
is that
everything.
Active, is that an active loss? Is that active loss?
An active loss. So here's the things. Anybody who knows about real estate with this bonus depreciation thing knows that if you just buy an apartment complex, that's passive. You can bonus depreciate it.
Unless you're a real estate professional.
Unless you're a real estate professional. Active. And if you have a full-time business that's not in real estate, you cannot be a real estate professional. The majority of your time has to be in real estate. That's the reason that rule is there. So this is an active loss because a car wash is considered an active business. It's not a real estate business. It's a business with real estate.
Today's episode is brought to you by the Exit Operating System. If you run a business right now and you are thinking about selling it one day and you want to know what you should focus on in order to maximize your exit value, go to exitos.io and sign up now. Peace.
All those losses. So if you have a business, you have an HVAC business in Tennessee and you got a little time on the side, you're making really good money. You're making $450,000, $500,000 a year, but you're paying the big bills. You're sending $200,000 to the tax man on a regular basis. You buy one car wash, you nuke that tax bill. You effectively got the car wash for free, right?
Yeah.
Then everybody says, well, what do you do the next year? You buy another car wash, right? So that's our plan. And we think we can accumulate anywhere from 12 to 15 of these in the next 4 or 5 years. And the returns are awesome. The returns were awesome before the bonus depreciation.
Yeah. Is that just section 179 bonus depreciation?
Yeah, essentially. Yep.
Which is awesome. That makes a ton of sense. One of the reasons why we continue to build the trampoline parks is because trampoline parks, we benefited from the same bonus depreciation. We would do a $2 million build and be able to write it off in the year that we put it all into use.
Right.
It's not stellar when you're looking to get loans on like a house.
Right.
You know, they're like
your business doesn't make any money.
You lose 900 grand a year every year.
Like, yeah, what the hell?
So that's been its own separate challenge, but
yes. Now to make it clear, that's a paper loss. You're not actually
totally
losing $1,000 a year.
No, yeah.
A lot of people can't figure that out. Yeah.
No, yeah. Yours is a paper loss because I'm sure it's just a cost seg and what the equipment is that's mostly of the car wash. You get to take all of it and the building, you got to do it on the 29 and a half or whatever the
Yeah.
Whatever the
building is 15 year too. For whatever reason,
oh.
The building on a car wash meets that 50. So this is another reason why the car washes are particularly, that's why they're building so many of them. For whatever reason, the IRS lumped in the building with the equipment. So it is 15 year. So you can write, that's why this chunk that you can write off is so massive. And that's why the car wash has just happened, which we just fell into by complete accident. That's why it's so attractive. And that's why I encourage people to do car washes specifically.
Yeah, no, there's no like environmental phase one, like phase one, phase three that you run into in a car wash. Does that happen?
The stuff that washes off a car, obviously, it's a bunch of dirt and a bunch of road grime, comes into this pit, and you have to handle that. It's basically a sludge. You have to handle that in a particular way. It basically needs to be dried out, and then it's tossed in a landfill. It doesn't need special handling, but you can't just go out and you're certainly not going to flush it into the river system or something.
Into the storm drain.
You can't put it in the storm drain. The water goes to the treatment plant, the pit dirt, it's handled. But, you know, it's handled millions of times a day across the country.
Right.
So it's not like it's some weird special thing. You just got to make sure whoever's been handling it before, like they're not dumping it out back or something. So it's not a huge problem.
Is it similar to like a storage unit where a lot of times you have an on-site manager that lives up in a little apartment?
Yeah.
Is that how they almost all?
Well, yeah. So you asked, there's a manager. So that's probably the number one thing that keeps real estate investors away, because they think you have people, all this equipment, pumps pumping away, it's soap flying everywhere. And then you got these people, you have these full-time people. And luckily our first car wash came with basically two guys. And we realized early on that having somebody there all the time, you easily make up for their expense with the saved sales. So what happens is somebody comes up and their credit card doesn't work. And if nobody's there, they just drive off and they probably won't come back. And a lot of times they're just entering their credit card wrong. Right. They're just literally facing it the wrong way. So, or they pull up to the automatic and they can't figure out what's going on, or they screw up pulling in, you know, there's just a lot of sort of foolery going on. Obviously,
a lot of dumb people in the world.
There's a lot of dumb people. You said it. So it's just a fact, you know, you've run a retail operation, you know, there's millions of these people. Having somebody there, actually, they make up for their salary easily every day. And so we just decided to have somebody there full time. There's somebody there 7 days a week from 9 to 5, and they clean out the bays. They make sure everything's clean. They help the customers. We have them give away free washes. We tell them if somebody looks like they're having a bad day, give them a free car wash. If somebody's not satisfied with their car wash, give them their money back. And so there is labor involved. Luckily, we had the easy button with the first one, but it's an easy job. It's pretty easy to hire for. We actually just needed to hire somebody, and we had this guy who practically lived at the car wash. He's got all these hot rods, and he's, you know, he's the guy out there with a diaper, like cleaning the same car every day after. And I was like, do you want to just work here? And he said, yeah. So now he works there. So labor has not been an issue. We really like what I like to call the old duffer. All three of these guys have an income from somewhere else, Social Security, public company, retirement, you know, that kind of thing. But they're bored. And they need some incomes. It's been easy to hire. We'll see how that holds up over the long haul.
With the second one that you bought, what's your geographical radius where outside of it, you're like, I don't like, do you feel like you got to be able to drive it on a Saturday, or how often are you checking on these things?
Yeah, that's where we're at right now. That's the bridge we're about to cross, because we're focusing on our community right now. It's fairly small. It's 110,000 people, 150,000 in the county. So there's probably another 20 washes we could buy here, but we have another competitor who's rolling them up too here. So now we're looking, there's a community 45 minutes away. There's a community about 70 minutes away. We're trying to figure that out now. I think if we're going to go big with this and go nationwide, we're going to have to figure out this remote operations thing. So we're not quite ready with sort of the policies and procedures and like, we don't really, like I said, we're only 16 months into this thing. So we're still kind of dumb. The goal is, I'm hoping to buy the one that's in my neighborhood right now. It's a huge operation. It's probably $3 million buy. Hoping to buy that one, really dial in the operations, and then we can start to expand. And I think eventually we could go statewide. And then I can see something where we do a franchise model, where we provide our policies and procedures. We provide all the equipment. We provide the soaps and everything, make this an easy button for folks like you who want this huge tax benefit or want this side gig, want to pass something on to your kids. You want something more permanent, but you don't want the headaches, right?
Like, totally.
So you could buy into the system and you don't have to do the system. You hire somebody and they do the system. And you're collecting the checks, and it's this terrific investment for you. So that's kind of the long-term goal. We'll see if that pans out.
Of the two that you bought, did you retro them to the same brand, or they're just kind of operating under their own?
So we rebranded them. We're Stop Wash Go now. We'll see if that makes sense as we go forward. But for these two, what we're really trying to do locally is the unlimited wash program. So the tunnels, the express washes, they're bread and butter. Is the monthly unlimited wash program
membership?
The membership. So that's the mailbox money that everybody wants. People are really not doing it in the touchless area, so we're going to do it. And we just talked to this guy in Denver who has 28 car washes, and he's doing it in the self serve. So you basically pay a monthly membership, and you get as many self serve minutes as you want. So we're going to try both of those things. It'll put us in direct competition to some degree with the express washes, but we'll be way cheaper.
Yeah. Is that because the equipment, like the tech of the equipment, just isn't there, and it's just used to like a coin operated thing?
Yeah.
Like, why doesn't that exist more frequently?
Well, yeah, it's funny. Like, 50% of this business is still cash. It's still quarters, chunk to chunk to chunk. That's what most people want to do. It's wild to me, right? Like, I can't remember last time I got a roll of quarters, but there's people who live like that, Like, and there's people who don't have a bank still. It's wild. So that's a huge part of our population. And that's one reason that we'll always survive is because I think there'll always be a segment of the population that is unbanked. Yeah, for the unlimited wash program, that's obviously you got to have a credit card and that kind of thing. But the technology is still behind most of these self-serves. And this is the opportunity. Most of these self-serve car washes are stuck in 1998.
Sure.
We looked at a five unit chain of car washes here in Colorado. Not one of them has credit card readers.
They were selling.
Yeah, they're selling them. And each place is doing like 50 grand a year, right? Put in credit card readers, you upgrade the place, you do throw some paint on it, you put it on Google Maps, three of the locations were on Google Maps, and you probably double that business, right? It's wild. Right. Now, but that's the opportunities for people. Like, so if you put 25% down into something and you double that business, you have tripled or quadrupled your equity, right?
Sure, yeah.
You use the leverage. It's just wild to me. That's why I get fired up talking about car washes. If you had told me like 2 years ago that you'd be car wash guy and you'd have this much enthusiasm about these crappy ass car washes, I'd be like, nah, come on, dude. No way.
No, I you're actually kind of getting me fired up a little bit. I'm fired. Like, on Twitter, you see the like laundromat stuff.
Yeah, I'm
sure laundromats have similar benefits of the equipment. I just think laundromats are shitty businesses, like, period.
I don't know.
And
yeah, it's so, I have some friends that are in them, and yeah, I'm with you. I don't see how you, I don't see how you blow it up, right?
Like, yeah,
car wash. Like, there's all this unused capacity, and there's better marketing and all this kind of stuff. I don't see it for the laundromats, so.
I had never thought of the self-serve. I never thought of that demo within the self-serve market. I mean, I have a boat and we have to take it to a self-serve car wash in order to wash the boat down.
Yeah.
I'd always kind of thought of like, I don't like doing businesses that cater to mostly the like lower echelon of the demographic because I just like the employees that you have to hire and it's just tough to be in those businesses.
Feels like, yeah.
Yeah, but I hadn't thought of people who have really nice cars, people who have expensive things,
RVs, so like, ATVs,
yeah, UTVs, all the toys that you
all
have
the
to
toys
have.
Which whose usage has blown up in the last 5 years. Like the UTV industry is just
you look
at that curve, it's just an absolute hockey stick. They can only go to a self serve. Like, you can't even wash those at home. Because you need this big high pressure gun, and then if you do it in your driveway, you got mud everywhere,
Right.
So they're our biggest fans by far.
What are the couple things? I assume like if it looks like there's a massive amount of deferred maintenance, deferred capex in the build.
It can be.
Like yeah. in terms of red flags where everything else pencils out, but now that you've operated it yeah. for enough time, like under no circumstance will I buy. These are the red flags to look out for. I assume deferred maintenance. I don't know
yeah,
what else.
Yeah, place that's been ignored for a couple decades. Find some that like this guy built it in 1986 and then never did another single thing to it, you know?
Right, yeah.
Now that yeah. place can be a headache. Now the places that were built in like 1999 and they didn't do a ton to it, you can work on those. And the thing that people don't realize is that there's this whole industry, like here in our small little county, there are three guys around that do nothing but work on car washes. If we get into a really real problem, we just call them up and they fix it. Like my guys don't right. have to like break their brain on this because there are some fairly complex systems involved. What we have them do is come in when we're buying a new one and say, what's wrong with this place? You know, sure. what does this place yeah. need? Is it a $20,000 fix or is it a $200,000 fix?
Right.
And so you don't have to do all this yourself. Right. If you're new to this stuff, there are people who can come in and just say, for this place, most of these places, yeah, they'll probably need 20,000-30,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
You don't need a Cadillac operation though. That's not who your right. customer is. That's why we love these places. We just upgraded our two automatics at the second place. It costs us $45,000. You know, if you go into like a express wash, that's $500,000. For all that gear.
Right.
So it's a simple business and it's fun. So
what's been the overarching, is it just that, something that's been run down that is just going to cost too much to bring it back up to an operational standard or.
Yeah. There's straight up abandoned ones that they just haven't run it in 5 years.
Right.
And we think about like the operational headaches associated with that. And we don't really want that. At the end of the day, Raleigh, I'm kind of lazy. Like I'm kind of like strategically lazy. Like I want to
totally.
Be able to, you know, I work out a lot and I get a lot of time on my mountain bike, a lot of time on the snowboard. So I'm not lazy in a traditional sense, but I don't want to work that hard. So
sure.
we see a property that's like, oh, this is going to take 6 months of effort all in.
Yeah.
Figure it out. You got to dig in. Your hands are going to get dirty. We're like, no, thanks. We're good.
Yeah. The typical multiple that they're running on is, I think I remember your tweet said it's doing 120 grand and you bought it for 650. The first
yeah.
one. Is that right?
Well, yeah.
Before debt service.
Yeah. It was doing 120 in top line. It was doing
oh, revenue.
60 in profit, basically net operating.
Okay.
income. And so it uh-huh. traded at about, it was doing like 65. So it traded at about a 10 cap. And then the second one, it was doing about 80 in net operating income. We got it for, it was doing 85 and we bought it for 760. So that's like an 11
sure.
ish.
Yeah.
So that's common. You'll see them all over the map. I've seen them at 5 caps and those people are generally trying to sell it for more like a covered land play.
Value of the land. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So we look for the ones in the 9 to 12 range.
And so do you feel like it's a viable option for someone? Obviously, if you have income, if you have entrepreneurial income that you're trying to cover, makes
yeah.
total sense. Do you feel like it's for like the W-2 earners amongst us, the lawyers, the bankers,
yeah.
those guys from a time commitment standpoint, it's feasible, doable?
I do. So as part, I built this course, which we can talk about in January, because I was just getting inundated with questions. And I was just like, I think this is valuable info and I think you guys enjoy this. So I built a course and as part of that, people kept still asking for my time. So I started doing consults and I've done probably 12 or 13 now. Every one of them was a person with a W-2.
Yeah.
Most of them, there was a lawyer, a couple lawyers, doctor, quite a few tech guys who were in their 40s or 50s and really, really high income. Right? Like if you're a network administrator in your 40s or 50s, you're probably bringing home $400,000 or $500,000 at this point. And so they were doing really well and had the same problem, huge tax bill and not sure what to do with this money and tired of writing it to the tax man. So
yeah.
This is very viable for a W-2. This is a nice, and all of them were getting their spouses involved because the kids were just about to leave the house or about to become empty nesters. They had all this time in their hands. she or he who's not full-time employed doesn't want to go back to whatever, you know, the dentist's office or wherever they work before the kids.
Yeah.
So this is a nice little side gig that can grow into a full-time gig. And then, you know, before you know it, you have a bunch of really valuable real estate that's cash flow.
Do you see yourself doing ground up builds on these, or just it's so much more cost effective to just acquire one that's, or yeah. Can you not even get zoning on these guys anymore?
Zoning's tough. The wastewater thing can be tough. Some places it's not so much that it's an environmental issue. It's the wastewater load, because we talked to like the wastewater district here, and they're just like, a car wash puts a ton of load. It's just a ton of dirty water that comes into our system. Yeah. And we just can't deal with it, so we won't permit them. So that's a tailwind for the existing ones. So like, you remember when I said I was lazy? So building one sounds like
was hard.
Lot like work. So no, I don't think we're going to build them, unless we just come across this crazy lot that's like, oh, there's not a car wash for miles. We need one here. We'll do one. I always say stuff like this, and then 5 years later, I'm like, fuck.
And then it ends up happening.
So, yeah. I'll probably build one.
Do you find it like, obviously, like you said, the self-storage thing has kind of blown up. I went through a phase of, you know, cold calling 20 self-storage owners, and they're all like, you could just tell that it had been picked over, you know, that they had,
yes,
that they get,
yeah,
10 of those phone calls a day.
Yeah.
Are you finding these mostly on market on LoopNet with brokers, or do you find them just,
yeah,
cold calling? What does sourcing look like?
Yeah.
And
both.
How picked over does it feel?
Well, in some ways it is, but like the first one we bought sat on the market for almost a year. But I say the market, but he was one of these brokers who he hates LoopNet because it just inundates you with tire kickers, right? So
sure.
His version of on market was sending a flyer to every realtor in town. It was basically what he would call a pocket deal.
Sure.
And he was taking calls on it, but it wasn't listed anywhere. The second one was listed everywhere. It was on LoopNet and Crexie. I actually, mm-hmm, prefer Crexie to LoopNet.
Yeah,
so, CREXI.com. People ask me that all the time. Where do you find these? And it's like, well, I'm looking at one an hour away right now. It just hit LoopNet. So
you're not proactively sourcing, like you're not doing proprietary search type
stuff.
I'll
take that back. So yeah. So what I've been doing lately is just calling other car wash owners. And I did this all last year too, because I had no idea what I was doing. And I would just ask them questions. They all helped. And then I always finished the conversation. Well, you know, if you ever feel like selling, let me know. That paid off this January, because a guy said, I'm ready to sell. Unfortunately, we got outbid by the other guys in town, but now it's helping with a big one in my neighborhood. We just had lunch last week. He wants to sell, so we're going to try to put a deal together. The short answer is I'm doing it all. I'm developing relationships with the existing owners, hoping they'll call me first. I'm combing the listings and trying to hit all sources.
Would you be proactively against buying an auto, like one of the bigger $5, $6 million one? Are you just like, I love this model so much that to the exclusion, yeah, of all others, or?
No. So that's interesting that you bring that up, because this one I'm looking at in my neighborhood, that's 3 million. He has a tunnel that he's rehabbed it, and he's just reopened it, and it's trying to get a customer base. Kind of a bad location. There's a bunch of backstory to it, but he really wants to sell them both. So if we want this big one, this sort of gem, we're probably going to have to buy his tunnel too. So we're considering that. All options are on the table. I don't want to compete with the express tunnel washes that much, but the fact of the matter is, if we can get in for the right basis, if the price is right, then I'll go for it.
Yeah.
But this one wouldn't be anywhere near 3 or 6 million. It'd be a lot less.
Well, I think you've sold me, dude. Like I feel like I have to, like I'm like starting to go on Craigslist.
Let's get on the internet right now. Let's pull up the I'm going to find you a car wash.
I can start doing that. It's funny. My mom has always wanted a coin car, you know, she's always like had this fantasy of going,
yeah,
and picking up the quarters at night.
Yeah,
that,
yeah,
my dad doesn't know about. She can go buy, I don't know, whatever the hell she buys.
She's going to take a bucket of quarters to Dillard's and be like, give me everything.
Yeah, this underground money. I've looked at them. Yeah, I feel like you're going to be the guy that gets me back into the brick and mortar space. Car washes are, yeah, it sounds 10 times simpler than stupid trampoline parks, entertainment, kids' birthday parties, and pizzas and cafes and all that
stuff. Well, that's the thing. Well, you've got so much risk in the business too, right? Like somebody breaks their arm, breaks their leg every day, probably. I feel like
insurance.
In the business, insurance and the risk involved. When somebody gets pissed off at our car wash or something, you know, we give them their $3 back. It's just simple, you know. It's funny.
Okay, where do people go? Where do people go for the where do I go for the course? Tell me how I how I get a piece of that.
Go to taxfreecashcow.com. That's the course I built out. You'll see my little video. I'll show you both the car washes. In the course, I actually show you my tax returns to prove that this is real. Taxfreecashcow.com. On Twitter, just search for Car Wash Guy. I have a big yellow bubble behind my head.
Your Twitter's awesome. We'll talk about your Twitter on the next time I have after I've bought your course and bought a couple
after
car
your
washes,
first we'll car wash and you get settled with that, then we'll talk about Twitter and all that. We'll get you all set up. You'll be good to go.
Okay, taxfreecashcow.com.
Yeah.
On Twitter, which is where I found you. Your Twitter is amazing. You give a ton of awesome values. So.
Yours too. I love yours too.
Oh, I appreciate that. Okay, well, I'm gonna get started on this. I'm gonna return a report. I'm gonna set a 6-month timer. I think I'm gonna go for it.
I know people are gonna ask, like, where do we invest? Like, can we just send you a check and you just invest it?
Sure.
We're probably going there someday, but we're not quite ready for that. So I think that's probably down the road too. Is we'll raise LP capital and
just stay on Twitter.
I know.
On Twitter and you'll be the first to know.
Yeah, exactly. Follow me on Twitter. You'll be the first.
Accredited investors only. All right, dude. Well, I appreciate the time, and we'll see you in the next one.
Thanks.